It's
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and Anna Mateo. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Australian researchers say a treatment found in the venom of one of the world's deadliest spiders could save the lives of heart attack victims. A team from the University of Queensland studied the poison from the Fraser Island funnel web spider in eastern Australia. They say the venom contains what could be a life-saving molecule, or peptide. The peptide could block so-called death signals sent to cells after a heart attack, when blood flow to the heart is reduced. A reduction in blood flow cuts off oxygen to the heart muscles. This results in a message being sent in the body for heart cells to die. Scientists have not been able to develop a drug that stops this death signal, even after many years of study. Australian experts have said that is one of the reasons heart disease continues to be the leading cause of death around the world. The World Health Organization estimates that 17.9 million people die each year from diseases of the heart. Dr. Sarah Schuer is a researcher at the Victor Chang Cardiac Research Institute. She helped lead a study on the spider venom that was recently published in the journal Circulation. We are using this special little peptide from a small portion of the funnel web spider venom, she said. What we found is this peptide is able to help protect the heart where there is a lack of blood supply or blood flow. She added that the discovery could also help heart transplant patients. Australian researchers believe the molecule from the spider venom blocks the heart's ability to sense acid after a heart attack. That interferes with the death message. The scientists hope the treatment can be used by emergency workers in the future. The discovery builds on earlier work that found that a small protein in the venom of the Fraser Island funnel web spider greatly improved patients' recovery from a stroke. The protein has been tested in human heart cells. The Australian team aims to start research studies in people for both stroke and heart disease within 2 to 3 years.
Reports of COVID-19 infection among fully vaccinated people are increasing. Olympic athletes, lawmakers, and heads of state are among the vaccinated who have tested positive for the virus. Such infections are called breakthroughs. They appear to be quite rare and usually cause little, if any, sickness. These breakthroughs are causing fear that the vaccines are not working. but most experts disagree. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the top infectious disease official in the United States. He said, infections among a very small number of vaccinated people do not mean the treatment is failing. He said the vaccines are working well, even against the Delta variant. It is now the leading cause of new infections worldwide. The main reason most experts consider the vaccines successful is that very few breakthrough cases result in hospital treatment or death. Most do not cause any sign of sickness at all. People who are vaccinated but still get sick generally have mild symptoms for a couple of days before the body starts fighting the virus. Only about 5,000 out of nearly 160 million vaccinated people have either died or been hospitalized in the U.S. and also tested positive for COVID-19. Medical experts are following the breakthrough cases. U.S. health agencies are considering whether vaccinated people should get an extra vaccine treatment called a booster. People worry when they hear news like that which came from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He was very sick with COVID-19 last year and is fully vaccinated now. However, he went into quarantine this week after being around a person who tested positive. But health officials in the U.S. want to be sure people are not overreacting to the breakthrough cases. That is because many people say they do not want to get the shots. The doctors worry those people will think getting the shot is not worth it if some people still get sick. Dr. William Schaffner is an infectious disease expert at Vanderbilt University. He said that is the wrong idea. People need to know the vaccines are doing their job. The vaccines were developed to keep us out of those terrible institutions we call hospitals, he said. We have to keep coming back to that. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. No matter what you choose to grow in the garden, at some point you will have to deal with unwanted plants, known as weeds. Lee Reich is a gardener, and he writes about gardening for the Associated Press. He says a weed is just a plant growing in the wrong place. Even a tomato plant can become a weed if it grows where you don't want it to. Besides being unwanted, what else do weeds do to a garden? Well, weeds can bring many problems. One problem is this. Weeds steal from nearby plants. They steal nutrients and water. If they grow large enough, weeds can steal, or rather block, sunlight from other plants. Weeds, explained Reich, also can bring harmful bugs and diseases into your garden. For example, a plant called horse nettle is a favorite food for a kind of beetle. This beetle also likes to eat potato plants. So if you are growing potatoes, you do not want horse nettle nearby. Some weeds release chemicals that can slow the growth of nearby plants. A plant called lamb's quarters is guilty of this. The chemicals it releases into the soil may hurt the growth of vegetables such as corn and tomato. It is important to note that some weeds are not all bad. In fact, some are edible. In other words, you can eat them. One edible weed is the one we just mentioned, lamb's quarters. It is not just edible, it is also very nutritious. The website Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners says that the leaves of lamb's quarters contain more iron and protein than raw cabbage or spinach, more calcium and vitamin B1 than raw cabbage, and more vitamin B2 than cabbage or spinach. In the book, How to Enjoy Your Weeds, English writer Audrey Wynne Hatfield writes that lamb's quarters was once the most valued vegetable for human beings and their animals. Dandelions are also viewed as a weed by many people. But dandelion leaves are also full of nutrients, and you can eat or use nearly every part of the plant. But even other weeds can do good things in our garden. So before we hurry outside to kill all the weeds, Reich warns us to consider their good side. He says that weeds protect bare soil. The roots of weeds can prevent the soil from being blown away by wind or washed away by rain. Over time, he writes, weeds improve the soil in many ways. Their roots break up soil to improve airflow and nutrient content. As the roots of weeds die, they add important nutrients to the soil, and some weeds may correct mineral imbalances in the soil. However, left to grow on their own, weeds can take over a garden. Many plants are considered weeds because they grow quickly and easily in bad conditions. To slow the growth of weeds, add a layer of weed-free organic material to the top of your garden, around the plants. This material, called mulch, improves the soil and keeps weeds from growing. Reich says wood chips, sawdust, grass clippings, straw, and pine needles are good for mulches. A simple and effective method of weed control is to break up the surface layer of the soil. But you must do this regularly. However, Reich gives this warning. Do not turn the soil over, ever. Buried in the soil are weed seeds, waiting for the right conditions. If you turn the soil over, you give those seeds the light and air they need to grow. Reich says to avoid using other man-made materials that may harm the environment, such as landscape fabrics or black plastic. Over time, landscape fabrics become mixed with soil and roots. This makes it difficult to reshape a garden. Black plastic eventually finds its way into the trash, and neither is good at controlling weeds. And, Reich says, they are both ugly. Herbicides are chemicals that kill plants. Reich says they should be a last resort, or the last thing you try, because everything else has failed. These chemicals may harm garden plants or other parts of the environment. They often hurt pollinators, like bees and butterflies. Probably the best way to fight some weeds is to eat them. Just make sure they are, in fact, edible. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we tell about the European settlers who established colonies in the American Northeast in the 1600s. Here is Steve Ember.
The Puritans were one of the largest groups from England to settle in the area known as Massachusetts. They began arriving in 1630. The Puritans had formed the Massachusetts Bay Company in England. The king had given the company an area of land between the Charles and Merrimack rivers. The Puritans were Protestant Christians who had split from the Anglican Church. They wanted to change the church to make it more holy, more pure in their eyes. The Puritans were able to live as they wanted in Massachusetts. Soon, they became that area's largest religious group. By 1690, 50,000 people were living in Massachusetts. Puritans thought their faith was the only true religion and that everyone should believe in it. They also believed that church leaders should lead the local government and that all people in the colony should pay to support the Puritan church. The Puritans thought it was the job of government leaders to tell people what to believe. But some people disagreed with the Puritans, who became leaders of the colony. One of those who disagreed was a Puritan minister named Roger Williams. Roger Williams believed, as all Puritans did, that other European religions were wrong. He thought the spiritual traditions of the Native Americans were wrong too. But he did not believe in trying to force others to agree with him. He thought that it was a sin to punish or kill anyone in the name of Christianity. And he thought that only members of the church should have to pay to support the church. Roger Williams began speaking and writing about his ideas. He wrote a book arguing that it was wrong to punish people for having different beliefs. Then he declared that the European settlers were stealing land that belonged to the Indians. He said the King of England had no right to let people settle on land that was not his. The Puritan leaders of the Massachusetts Bay Colony forced Roger Williams to leave the colony in 1636. He traveled south. He bought land from local Indians and started a city, Providence. The English Parliament gave him permission to establish a new colony, Rhode Island, with Providence as its capital. As a colony, Rhode Island accepted people of all religious beliefs, including Catholics, Quakers, Jews, and even people who did not believe in God. Roger Williams also believed that governments should have no connection to a church. This idea of separating church and state was new. Later, it would become one of the most important of all the governing principles of American democracy. Other colonies were started by people who left Massachusetts to seek land. One of those colonies was Connecticut. A group led by a Puritan minister named Thomas Hooker left Boston in 1636. They moved inland and settled near the Connecticut River. Others soon joined them. Other groups from Massachusetts traveled north to find new homes. The King of England had given two friends a large piece of land in the north. The friends divided it. John Mason took what became the colony of New Hampshire. Ferdinando Gorgas took the area that later became the state of Maine. Maine was never a colony. It remained a part of Massachusetts until the United States was established in 1776. The area that became New York State was settled by the Dutch. They called it New Netherland. Their home country, the Netherlands, was a great power with colonies all over the world. A business called the Dutch West India Company owned most of the colonies. The Dutch claimed American land because of explorations by Henry Hudson, an Englishman working for the Netherlands. The land the Dutch claimed was between the areas settled by the Puritans in the north and the Anglican tobacco farmers in the south. The Dutch were not interested in settling the territory. Instead, they wanted to earn money. The Dutch West India Company built trading posts on the rivers claimed by the Netherlands. Indians brought animal skins to these posts for use in making goods for buyers back in Europe. In 1626, the Dutch West India Company bought two islands from the local Indians. The islands were Manhattan and Long Island. The Dutch paid for Manhattan with goods worth only about $24. The Dutch West India Company tried to find people to settle in America, but few Dutch wanted to leave Europe. So the colony welcomed people from other colonies and other countries. These people built a town on Manhattan Island. They called it New Amsterdam. It was soon full of people who had arrived on ships from faraway places. Up until this time, the population was mostly Dutch and British, but now one could hear as many as 18 different languages spoken in New Amsterdam. In 1655, the governor of New Netherland took control of a nearby Swedish colony on Delaware Bay. 9 years later, the English did the same to the Dutch. The English seized control of New Amsterdam and renamed it New York. That ended Dutch control of the territory that is now the states of New York, New Jersey, and Delaware. Most of the Dutch in New Amsterdam did not leave after it became New York. The English allowed everyone to stay. They let the Dutch have religious freedom. The Dutch were just not in control anymore. The Duke of York owned the area now. He was the brother of King Charles II of England. The king gave some of the land near New York to two of his friends. Sir George Carteret and Lord John Berkeley established a colony. They called it New Jersey after the English island where Carteret was born. The two men wrote a plan of government for their colony. It created an assembly that represented the settlers. It provided for freedom of religion. Men could vote in New Jersey, whatever their religion. Soon, people from all parts of Europe were living in New Jersey. Then King Charles took control of the area. He sent a royal governor to rule. But the colonists were still allowed to make their own laws through their elected assembly. The King of England did the same in each colony he controlled. He collected taxes from the people who lived there, but allowed them to govern themselves. One religious group that was not welcome in England was the Quakers. Quakers called themselves Friends. They believe that everyone has an inner light that leads them to God. Quakers believe they do not need a religious leader to tell them what is right, so they had no clergy. Quakers believe that all people are equal. The Quakers in England refused to recognize the king as more important than anyone else. They also refused to pay taxes to support the Anglican Church. Quakers believe that killing is always wrong, so they would not fight, even when they were forced to join the army. They also refused to promise their loyalty to a king, or a government, or a flag, only to God. For all these reasons, the English did not like the Quakers. Many Quakers wanted to leave England, but they were not welcome in most of the American colonies. One Quaker found a solution. His name was William Penn. William Penn was not born a Quaker. He became one as a young man. His father was an Anglican and a good friend of the king. King Charles borrowed money from William's father. When his father died, William Penn asked that the debt be paid with land in America. In 1681, the king gave William Penn land, which the king's council named Pennsylvania, meaning Penn's Woods in Latin. The Quakers now had their own colony. William Penn said the colony should be a place where everyone could live by Quaker ideas. That meant treating all people as equals and honoring all religions. It also meant that anyone could be elected as a leader. In most other colonies, people could believe in any religion, but they could not vote or hold office unless they were a member of the majority church. In Pennsylvania, all religions were equal.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.